I'm here with a really dear friend who lives in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Moshe Gerst. He has become quite a known figure in influencing, inspiring, and just sharing so much light and wisdom to the world with his books, his shiurim, his teaching, his speaking, his writing, in so many different other ways. But Moshe and I go way back to our time studying in Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and have been able to crossroads over and over again in different ways of just pure hashgacha pratis. Moshe, thanks so much for making time in your very busy schedule to have this conversation with me.
Well, it's my privilege and pleasure, Yaakov. Any time with you is good time for me.
So we had actually hoped to have an episode together discussing one of the chapters in my book with our regular attached conversations episode or series, but we're taking a break from all of that with everything going on right now with Klal Yisrael and trying to focus a little bit more on what's right in front of us, which I think really fits with so much of what we both try and share, and especially you, living life focused on what's right in front of us. And so much of what you've written about in your first book, hopefully at some point in this short conversation, you'll tell us about your new book that's coming out. But in your first book, or not your first book, your second book, it's all the same to me. You talk a lot about living with equanimity, with hishtavus, of living with what's right in front of me, living in the moment. I'm curious to hear you share maybe any reflections on, first of all, just introducing that concept to anyone who's not familiar with it. But then how did that concept kind of broaden or deepen itself when it came to life in the current situation that you're finding yourself?
It's a great question, Yaakov. Thank you for that. The name of the book is It's All the Same to Me. And from the title, people think that I'm a pretty apathetic person and that, you know, everything's laissez-faire and it's all the same to you, right? And there were people who reached out to me in the beginning of the war and were like, oh, how are you doing? It's all the same to you, right? It's just, and it's a grave misunderstanding of what hishtavos is and what equanimity is and what I meant in the title and what I continue
people
to mean in the title.
Say that. It sounds kind of passive aggressive, pretty
yeah,
snarky.
Yeah, people, yeah. I know some snarky people. And but it's come up even over the years. You know, whenever I meet people who are in deep suffering, and sometimes it's either sarcasm is their coping mechanism, or, you know, when the tragedy that happened on Lag BaOmer, we're very close with one of the families, and, you know, their only words to me were, I guess it's not all the same. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. You know, like, which is, you know, it hurts. It's deep. It's when people are hurting, right? So it's a challenge to then meet with a concept that is outside your frame of reference in the moment. So what I mean when I say that, you know, it goes all the way back to, I think, the Chovos HaLevavos, Duties of the Heart, written about 1,000 years ago. It's the first place that I recall using that word, hishtavos, the Torah's language for equanimity. But it goes back to, there's a verse in Psalms, in Tehillim, that says, Shivisi Hashem l'negdi tamid, which means, I place God before me always. And the word Shivisi, it could have used a different Hebrew word. It could have used the word samti, which means I put God in front of me all the time. The word Shiviti is related to the word shaveh, which means the same or equal. And the idea that's coming from that verse is that when you can see that everything is sourced from the same place, right? It's all the same to me really means it's all God to me, right? Not that it's all the same as in indifference, but all the same as in sourced from the same place. And therefore, the way that you now relate to what's going on isn't chaotic, but exists within a cosmic order. Exists within something, there's a framework that's bigger than your mind can even contain. And everything that you experience in this world is coming through that lens. So equanimity, the reason why it's associated with a level of inner peace and tranquility is because the world of equanimity doesn't see things as better or worse as subjective, but all being equal from an objective, bigger framework. That's how everything is being seen, interpreted. And so if that's your perspective as you're going through, so everything becomes allowed. It's really giving permission for all experiences. That's really, and certainly now, you know, the roller coaster of emotions we mentioned before we got on the call, it's like this roller coaster of grief anxiety, frustration, anger, joy in seeing unity, you know, happiness in hearing good news, right? There's, you know, there's so much happening on the inside when you're going through a collective tragedy and one that's continuing to unfold. So the world of equanimity and the world of Ishtavas, what that does for me and for somebody who's using that as a practice is nothing is fragmented, right? It's not standalone. And the moment you start fragmenting ideas and keeping them isolated from a bigger picture, you can fall deeply into a world of suffering. Or you take a small win to be everything, and then you're now on a high, and that balloon's going to pop also. So you stay at a state of equanimity when you realize it's all part of a much broader, bigger context. And so for me, it really has been about embracing all the different emotions all the way through. And the equanimity underlying it is, I feel okay to feel upset, and I feel okay to feel okay, and I feel okay to be numb. And all of those things along the way exist within the framework of, well, that's also Hashem. That's also the same. That's also sourced in the same place.
So tell me if I'm saying this right, that it's all the same to me doesn't mean that I have the same feeling no matter what's going on. It means that I'm going to have different feelings, but all of those feelings are coming from God, are connected to God, are connected to this broader framework. So it's not that because it's all the same, I'm not going to feel sad, or I'm not going to feel scared, or I'm not going to feel joyous or excited. I'm going to feel sad or scared or joyous or excited. And they're all going to have the same, in a sense, value to me because they all come from God. So if anything, it's actually the opposite of minimizing or constricting the emotional response. It actually really expands and empowers the full gamut, the full spectrum of the emotional response.
That's right. It's allowing yourself to be at peace with the whole gamut, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the peace that you feel is not because nothing's happening, but it's allowing everything to happen and to be there. And of course, you know, the fact that we're equanimity as in Hishtavos, because if you use the word equanimity, it might have other meanings depending on where you're coming from. So that's right. The best English translation of the word Hishtavos. But when we're coming from the word Hishtavos, the original text, it's an equanimity that doesn't come from an apathy, but one that comes from a cosmic universal consciousness that you're allowing yourself to be there. And so the fact that you like or dislike the feeling is less important than the fact that you can come to terms with, allow the feeling to be there. Mm-hmm. And that's just not just with feelings, that's with the events themselves. And that's what the thoughts you're having while they're going on. It's the full experience of what's taking place.
Yeah. Yeah. Your new book that's coming out, I believe, is about joy. And so maybe first of all, you can tell us a little bit about it, but then in particular, relating it to the context of what we're in as the Jewish people right now. And how does joy fit into this reality right now?
Gosh, these last few weeks, as I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, we wrote the book 4 years ago, and spent the last year working on publishing it. And in terms of coming out, it's coming out in a couple weeks. And some people are looking at this as the timing couldn't be more ripe. And from my perspective, it's like, I don't even know how we bring it to the table, because conceptually it is right. But the way that it's written for the individual within the context of life is okay. I'd like my personal life to be better. What happens when a tremendous tragedy takes place, like a colossal event of what happened on October 7th? What happens is two things in terms of our perspectives. Number one, we localize our attention, meaning that becomes the entire focus of our attention. Nothing else really matters so much right now. And it doesn't really matter who you are in the world. And it doesn't matter what your opinion is. You're thinking about this, right? It's in the conversation. It's right there in front of you. So our attention is now all in that space. And then the other thing we do is we step out of the personal and into the collective, right? It's me and my people. It's me and my community. It's me and my family, right? The book is written as a, you know, spiritual self-help book, right? That's the style of book it is. And so, not that it would be trite, God forbid, you know, to go through it now, but I imagine that a person looking at that, it's like, that's not the forefront of the focus. with that in mind, as my introduction to the ideas in the book, the ideas stand alone. Again, if I were writing the same book for the context of what's going on now, the ideas don't change, right?
It makes a lot of sense what you're saying. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Conceptually, intention, certainty, and joy, which are the three conditions. Three conditions to what? To living a supercharged life. To living a life that's what in Torah we call chassidus, which is lamala min ateva, it's going me'ala me'aver. It's living in the beyond, an extraordinary life, right? So if you want, there's living life here, and then you can live life here, right? So the way to live this supercharged life is to go through these pathways, what we're calling intention, certainty, and joy. What intention is about is living an authentic, honest, spiritual connection to self, meaning getting outside of the opinions of the world around you and even the opinions of yourself that you've adopted throughout your life. It's the return to self movement, right? So that's what the world of intention is about. The world of certainty is being able to let go of your need to control life and recognize that there is an underlying cosmic guidance and direction to all of reality, that you're not alone and that you're not living in pure chaos, but that there is a divine order. To the degree that both of those things are running at a higher frequency inside of you, so the experience is one of joy, love, peace, that becomes the barometer, the measuring stick by which you can tell, oh, do I believe in myself? Do I believe in a good universe? Am I in good rapport with the essence of who I am? Am I in rapport with the essence of the universe? When those two things are in harmony, so joy is what you experience as the byproduct. That's how you can really sense and tell. Joy is a word that I'm using as opposed to happiness, because joy is pointing to something more fundamental. It's something that comes with a sense of peace. It's closer to that kind of state of equanimity that we're speaking about before. And so I've been thinking a lot about it, obviously, for the last couple of weeks while everything's been going on. And it's the same thing. Intention in this context is how honest are you being with yourself in this process? There are two types of people that I have found as I interview individuals and speak to them about what they're going through and how they're responding internally to the tragedies of our time. And there are some type of individuals that they feel called to be deeper in the pain. That's what they're called to. They want to see more videos. They want to hear more stories. They want to feel connected to those who were murdered and those who were on the front lines. That's how they are called in this experience. And others are looking for faith, and they're looking for hope, and they're looking for light, which, by the way, if you put those two types of people in the same room, there can even be friction, because one thinks that you're being insensitive and the other one thinks that you're negative, right? But those are different ways that we're coping with and reacting to this major, major thing that just happened and continues to take place in our life. So intention is non-judgmentally accepting yourself for who you are in that space and letting yourself go towards that calling and then bringing that non-judgment to the others around you, right? So that would be one of those areas where listening to your soul, allowing yourself to be who you are and not feeling bad for that is like one area of expression where that finds itself. And as far as certainty is concerned, obviously over here in tremendous uncertainty, it's being certain that I can't know everything, but that I have enough belief to know that I can't know everything, and that's okay. That there is more to what I'm holding on to, right, as I'm moving through this. So when both of those two things are there, you might not feel happy, but you can still maintain an underlying level of peace and joy with what's going on. I don't think joy, the way that we naturally use the word, is applicable while you're feeling the pain of what's going on. You're in the pain, and that's what it is, right? Happiness is a subjective experience of perceiving something as being good. And if you perceive it as good, you feel happy. If you perceive it as bad, you feel upset, sad, angry, whatever the feeling is. So I think as long as most of us are in this place, certainty is there that gives you kind of like an anchor in something more that allows you to keep going, even though the pain might tell you subjectively, I should stop everything and give up right now because it's so heavy, right? And certainty allows you to keep moving forward.
Yeah. I think I have both of those people inside of me. The sink deeper into it and then the look for the light. And it's like this constant back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm curious if for anyone who might be listening who has children, let's say especially for those living in Eretz Yisrael, but really living anywhere, considering the rise of anti-Semitism, the fear that exists is everywhere in the world now, and kids are aware of it too. How do you impart these messages to your kids, if you're comfortable sharing that? Or how would you advise someone to, as a parent, to try and help their children find their stability in what is really unstable, but even deeper than that is stable. How can we relay some of these ideas in a way that kids can understand and be helped by?
Yeah, also an amazing question. I love speaking with you, Byako. Just like so poignant and the things that matter. I'm finding that there's a very big difference between people with their children here in Israel and their children in America. There's two different experiences that are happening. Also because obviously you feel anti-Semitism in Israel, but it's you're with an enemy,
right?
It's not the same thing. There's a, you know, a lot of people that I'm friends with or other colleagues, some Jewish and some not Jewish, are sitting in offices and they don't know what the person sitting next to them feels about the situation. And so that level of unknown, right? The uncertain of the person sitting next to you on the bus or in the mall, like that's a different kind of fear than what I'm dealing with my children, which is, you know, when you hear the siren, you have to run to a room, right? And make sure the doors are locked at night. It's a different fear, right? When you're sitting with the enemy. So maybe if we were to just zoom in, just a drop on each one, if a person is sitting in Israel, you know, one of the main things that I found to be helpful for my kids is the checking in with them, and not once in a while, like every day we're sitting down, you know, once in the morning, afternoon, evening, right? You know, at least a couple times a day, how you feeling about the situation? Really, really sitting with them and hearing them, because sometimes they do feel fear. Sometimes they don't feel the fear, but they know they're supposed to. And they can express that. They can say, I know I'm supposed to be afraid, but I don't feel like we're in a war right now. I don't feel like it's going on. But that's also important to give voice to that. So part of the experience with kids is really just letting them express those emotions. That itself is a major part of the process. I find the most difficult element with my children is my youngest, who's 2 and can't express, but knows when the siren goes off, it's scary. And so it's a presence. It's really just being with them and holding them and spending time with them and having a lot of love within you and compassion while you're there. As far as, you know, my brother lives in LA, and all my other friends and family who live in America and all feel this fear of unknown of the people that they're with. What I think is, again, this is intuitive and I'm not there at the moment, so I can't say this with 100% certainty. But it feels like that which gives us the deepest strength is the unity that we come together. I think the one thing that everyone can agree on after October 7th was how quickly everyone came together in strength and in love, like a powerful love. People still, what can I do? I don't even know. I want to do more. What can I do? What can I do? And to be able to give your kids a sense of unity and family, and you know, you don't always feel the power of a nation. And the nationality here, it's second to family. It's like, we're a family. It's like, you know, you think about the people in the south of Israel, and it's not just, oh, my people were there. It's like, those are my cousins. Those are my brothers and sisters. This is our family. And to the degree that you give that to your children, you're also imparting that they're part of something so much more, so much bigger. It's not just you. It's not just your, you know, the however many people are sitting in the house you're in. You're part of something that is big in this world and has been around for a long time and is going to be around for a long time. And that gives a person a lot of power and strength to know that, yes, the world, you know, it's what we say every year on Pesach at the Seder table, right? And we say, in every generation, people come up and rise against us. And in every generation, you know, we're working with God. This is a long conversation, and you're part of that. And I think giving people that strength and that backbone. I remember my wife was once meeting with Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky. And at the time, she had a similar question. And he said, just remember who your great-great-grandparents were. Just remember, you know, this, it's not just you and it's not just your parents. Like, just remember, you know, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, you come from Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. You just remember where you come from. You're part of something so big, and it gives deep strength.
Maybe one more question, if that's okay, is I know you have very close personal relationships with some very, very special people, Gedolei Yisrael, Rav Asher Weiss, Rav Ariel Groschenfeld, others. I'm curious if there's anything, and I know you've been in conversation with them since October 7th. Is there anything you've heard from any of them? It doesn't have to be from one of those two, but just some examples that might be a little bit different from the things that everyone's already hearing. The things that everyone is already hearing are the things we need to continue hearing. So there's a reason why they're being repeated. So I'm not taking anything away from those things. Cliches become cliche for a reason. The basics are the basics for a reason. But anything that you've heard that you think is a little bit of a different angle that maybe would be important to share?
The one thing that Rebbe Gershenfeld did point out to me in conversation was, he said, just remember our two major battles in the last 100 years. One was on Yom Kippur, and the other one was on Simchas Torah, Shemini Atzeres. He said, these things don't happen on accident, right? This is a very, very profound, godly message for us to listen to and, tried to think about, what are the themes of these days? What's happening during this time? And to really allow that to go in, it's one thing, Shabbos is, it's first and foremost, it's a time for spiritual connection and family connection. But this was specifically a time of dancing and coming together with our joy around what Torah is, right? What is that in our life? And, he said, it's something that we really need to take seriously, not to let that be a side point that it was October 7th. It was Shemini Atzeres. It was Simchas Torah. And that is not something to be, it happened to be. It's like, no, that's mm-hmm. profound. It's something to think about. He didn't lead with, and therefore it was, make sure that that's in your box of ideas that you're thinking about when you're introspecting over here. That's an important point. And I hadn't heard anybody speak about it as strongly as that.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much. If you want to just give 1 minute of plugging, which you should, to the book coming out or to the book tour that's coming up, just as we wrap up, would love for you to take a moment to do that.
Well, I appreciate that, Yaakov. Yeah, I am. I will be in America from November 1st through December 4th. Lots of different cities throughout America. You can find more information on that on all my socials and my website. And the context obviously has shifted. So in terms of the talks, we're speaking about healing and processing and awakening through adversity, using the three conditions, which are intention, certainty, and joy, as the backdrop for how do we work through these realities. The book comes out November 7th, but it's available for pre-order. I feel awkward pushing a book during this time, so I'm just letting information be known. And wishing everybody tremendous peace and blessings, and wherever they are, to know that we always make it through to the other side. Light prevails.
Yeah, amen. Rav Moshe, thank you so much. Rav Moshe and I will be doing a joint talk, I guess, of some sort, I'm not sure what to call it, event, a joint event together coming up in Chicago on his book tour. So we'll share more information about that. But thank you so much for making this time. It's really always very special to see you.
Pleasure's mine.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please follow us on WhatsApp, YouTube, or Instagram. All our podcast series can be found wherever you listen to podcasts. I'd love to hear from you, so please reach out with questions, comments, or suggestions, or to be added to our WhatsApp groups. You can reach us through email using yaakov.attached@gmail.com or on WhatsApp at 773-888-2413.